Hold on, guys. We're having a little technical issues here. Give me one second. Okay, so we're not having any, we're having some audio issues today, so we're going to have to skip the opening intro. But I want to welcome everybody here to episode 55 of the Bitcoin Veteran Spaces. I am your host, Coleman, and I hope everybody had a fantastic weekend. I hope you were able to go out there and orange peel some of your friends and your neighbors, talk about Bitcoin. I'm sure the election came up in a couple of conversations. So we'll be definitely hitting on that. But while we're getting everything settled and fixed here in the background, while everybody's refilling their coffee and just getting the gunk out of your eyes if you're over on the West Coast, I want to make sure everyone understands the reason that we do this every Monday through Friday at 10 a.m. Eastern time. And that is to ensure that everyone understands the values that our founding fathers fought for, and that the rights to liberty, to free speech, freedom of religion, and due process, and the freedom to assemble are not to be taken for granted. And that's why we go out and, you know, the show is not going to be political, but it's important that we all go exercise our constitutional right and vote tomorrow. And it doesn't matter what party you vote for, but as long as you go out there and cast your vote and contribute to what we fought so hard for. There's a lot of citizens and countries who don't get this opportunity to do this. So don't take it for granted. And there are definitely a lot of people who would like to not allow us to have so many freedoms. So it's important that you go out there and cast your vote and make a vote that's going to be pro-freedom, pro-technology, pro-Bitcoin. I think it's pretty clear between the two parties what their stances are. And so just make sure that you're choosing wisely. Bitcoin is for freedom. It's for decentralized technology. It's for peer-to-peer transactions without having government interference. And I'm sure if you were on any social media platform over the weekend, you saw a perfect example of government interference going on with Peanut the Squirrel in New York. So we'll definitely be covering that. So sending out a couple speaker invites to get some people on here on the panel. But I just want to say good morning to everybody, and let's have just a fantastic show. So good morning, Bob, Van Kirk, Hunter, Bitcoin Carney, AC, Other Jordan, LBN, DA Sales, Brandon, Chivas, Death in Bitcoin. Good morning. Good morning. Hey, Omar, how was your weekend, sir?
Hey, it was pretty good. Mostly uneventful, you know, so I guess that's good. I did get a, I think you saw in the back channels there, and I got a future bit of Apollo that I've been checking on every like hour or so to see how much progress it's made on syncing blocks. So that's been my, main activity for the weekend. So I should just like dedicate a screen to it so I don't have to keep looking, but we'll get there.
Can you go over what that is?
Yeah. So it's basically it's like a little computer. It's running on Linux operating system. But it comes to you, with, future bits like OS or, their interface, I guess. And it basically, you can use it to mine, Bitcoin to contribute some hash to it. I have it set up as basically like a lottery miner. So I'm doing a solo mining instead of doing a pool because like with the, it's only, I think I have it now at like the balanced mode. So it's like 7 terahash or something. So if I put that in a pool, it's not really going to do anything. You know, I might get a couple cents back, but it's going to cost me more to run. So it's basically a lottery miner. I have it solo mining. And like right now it's not actually mining, I guess, cause it's not, the nodes aren't synced, but once the nodes are synced, then it'll be going. I think I don't really know exactly how that works, but that's my impression of it at least. So, you can use it as a computer if you want to. Like I have a monitor next to it, down in my basement. I don't think it's like the fastest. I think it only has like 4 or 8 gigs of RAM. And, you know, the main thing as far as, contributing and running a node. So it's pretty cool. It's pretty relatively easy to set up. You know, there's a couple pain points. I'll probably write something about it here in the next week or so. Just like a little blurb about it. You know, it's cool. It's like another step in, you know, the Bitcoin journey. So, I'm excited about it. It's nice to, I shut down most of my hosted miners this year. So it's nice to still have like a tiny little, toe in the waters there. So, yeah, that's basically it.
What are your thoughts on Peanut the Squirrel?
New York is a terrible state. There's so many things wrong with New York. The list could go on and on. As sad as Peanut the Squirrel and Rocket Raccoon are, it's like barely scratching the surface of the evil that is New York. So, yeah, it sucks, but I mean, people have to realize that whenever you say there ought to be a law, it means the government will kill you to enforce it. It doesn't matter how trivial it is. You know, they'll kill you, and obviously they'll kill your pets too, you know? So, remember that when you think there ought to be a law. There's a lot of things that piss me off. And I think, you know, we've been trained to think, oh, well, we should make that illegal so I don't have to deal with it. But, you know, remember at the end of the day, like some bureaucrat will get a hold of that and abuse it. So, you know, beware.
Beware. Yeah. I had no idea what was going on, over the weekend. I had never heard of Peanut the Squirrel. I saw all the outrage going on, so had to do a little investigating. But it is pretty crazy that they go in there. I'm sure there's a lot to the story we're not getting, and so we're only getting part of the whole story. But I do think it was a good example of government overreach being a little too extreme, and how this was made a priority over everything going on.
Yeah, I think that's the most absurd part, right? Like, it's just like, you know, when you look at like all the different groups that have like SWAT teams, you know what I mean? like the environmental team, like going in and like, you know, doing whatever to get the squirrel and raccoon. It's just absurd. It just shows, I make the argument in one of my articles about how like this is just a reflection of our, you know, the war machine getting its tendrils into everything, right? It used to be exclusively overseas that we would see like the impact of the military industrial complex. But unfortunately, the oppression of Americans is a very viable profit avenue for them. So the result is the militarized police institutions, and not just like your day to day police, you know, but like these obscure environmental groups or whatever, you know, every tendril of the government is getting its own, militarized equipment, as they would say. And it's because of, you know, it's profitable. You know, they're like, oh, we accidentally oversold to the federal government, so we'll donate it to this local government. And it makes it look like, you know, no loss, right? But then that feeds into the, you know, if you look at the statistics, I don't have them offhand, but the use of no-knock raids, the justifications for them, it's all absurd. And it's a detriment to the American people, and also like the police officers, right? Like it's highly dangerous situation. You know, if you kick in, you know, somebody kicks in my door and like, I don't know who it is, like I'm not unarmed, you know? So, it's dangerous for everybody. And that's not a situation that anybody should be put in for trivial matters, right? Honestly, the only time that it should get violent like that is if there is, immediate risk to like bodily harm. Like if there's like a hostage situation is the only reason I could see storming a building. Most of the times it's for like drugs or something like that. But if they're able to flush down the drugs that they have in the building, it's not worth it in my opinion. I think we need a big overhaul in terms of government. And, you know, the squirrel thing, it's like, yeah, it's sad because it's a cute fuzzy squirrel, but it's just a symptom of a much, much larger problem.
Yeah, I think that was perfectly said, Yomar. It lines us up for the first thing I really want to tackle. And it was Ron Paul over the weekend said that he would be very interested in joining Elon Musk's effort to cut the government waste in Trump's second administration. So I Again, not trying to make the show political, but this definitely, we need to spend some time on this because, for myself, especially, Ron Paul was the one that got me down my Bitcoin, journey down the rabbit hole. The book came on recommendation of Jack Spirko. If you haven't heard of him, he has a podcast, the Survival Podcast. So he's a good follow. But I have to give him credit because without him, I don't think I'd be where I am today. And so I read his book, not Jack Spirko's, Ron Paul's book and the Fed, and it really started opening the door for me. And so, I think it's very interesting that he's getting another kind of relife or revamp and getting a chance to kind of achieve his life mission. So for me, it's really uplifting. But I have to look at the other side to it, and the deep state, whatever you want to call that, they just must be shitting a brick with the amount of people that are coming in that are just trying to tear them apart between RFK, Elon just slashing government, and then Ron Paul, getting in there. I don't think it's going to be as smooth as transition if Trump's team wins as we may think. I think you're going to see a lot of pushback from this. And so EMR, I know this is kind of right down your lane, but I'd like to get your thoughts on this.
Anything with Ron Paul is good. Ron Paul is, as close to like, in terms of politicians, he's as close to like our founders as I think our generation will get. Like he was, instrumental in me, not for Bitcoin necessarily, but, just for like switching from like your typical, grunt kind of standard neocon type mentality to, one that's like liberty minded and capable of like higher thought. Ron Paul was pretty, instrumental in that change for me. So, whenever I see him getting excited about something and involved in something, I like that. I don't trust many politicians. There's probably two that I would trust, and that would be Ron Paul and Thomas Massey. So like those are, kind of like beacons for me. So like I don't trust, and we talked about this before, but I don't trust that Trump will follow through on a lot of things, just at surface level. Like I have my concerns, particularly because of how poorly last administration went. If they're able to endorse it, then maybe they're being told something behind the scenes, adds some credibility, at least in my eyes, that adds some credibility. I don't think I'll, I don't know if he told me like, hey, I'm going to have Ron Paul in charge of like ending the Fed, like maybe I'd vote for him, but, just being in the periphery of the administration, I don't know if it'll change my vote at all from my write-in choice versus, voting for Trump. Like the state I'm in, it doesn't matter. Honestly, if you're in a swing state, I think it's a tougher choice to make. Yeah, that's my thoughts on it. One second. I actually have a call coming in, so I'll jump back in a second.
No, you're good. I'd appreciate that. And so I was just kind of looking. So again, Ron Paul's thing was ending the Federal Reserve. And as much as I like to see it done, I don't see it being possible with it getting done in this administration over the next 4 years, just because of the implications that it would have by ending the Federal Reserve. A lot of the stock market relies on the Fed to maintain the financial markets. And so, whether the Fed's providing quote unquote stability and monetary guidance, without that, I think you'd see a huge run in the stock market. Also with bonds, the Fed is the buyer of last resort. So I think you'd see, just crazy swings in the bond rates and the yields. And so I think they can get it done, but I don't think it gets implemented in the first 4 years. And so again, I think we just have to have realistic expectations, if this was to get implemented. But I do think it is a positive, and it does get me excited to see, a possible Trump victory with getting Ron Paul and Elon Musk in there. And say what I know a lot of people don't feel very strongly about Elon. With some of the ways that he's handled X and what he wants to do with it. But again, I think overall, I think he's someone that's going to be really positive in our corner. He's going to help the cause for freedom, freedom of speech. I mean, again, nobody's perfect. I think, everybody likes to have, you know, someone in charge who's a complete, it fits that their image and all of their beliefs 100%. You know, and unfortunately, unless you're running for that and you get the office, no one's going to fit that, that spot for you. So you have to concede with some things and just kind of accept, some losses, that maybe not, it won't go as exactly how you intend, but overall, I think this is going to be really good for the country and really good for, the people. Yomar, I'm not sure if you're off your call yet, but what do you think, what are your thoughts if they end the Fed right away? What do you think would be the major occasion that would happen?
Yeah, I doubt they'll actually do it. I think that they'll take steps. Like you're saying, it's not going to be something that's quick. You know, for them to actually end the Fed, you know, it's like it's the house of cards, like everything's kind of built upon. So I think there would be like some panic there. You know, unless they have something really like well thought out that they're going to switch to, you know, I don't know how they would just outright end it. I think they could do steps to, take the teeth out of it. You know, I think it would be easier for them to get rid of potentially like the income tax and then, you know, replace that with like the tariff system that he discussed. He got into a little bit more details on the Joe Rogan show. And then like dismantling just the Leviathan federal government, all the bureaucrats, all of that stuff. You know, if you hollow it all out, then it becomes kind of like the institution will still be there. So like it won't maybe have that, like collapse impact, like on the markets and stuff like that. But it'll really be like setting it up to get taken out completely. And from a strategy point of view, it's not the worst case. Cause like, you know, if you can deliver on some of those things early on, like the income tax thing, everybody will like that. It doesn't like, you can look at like all the polls and people will talk about it's absurd. Like the amount of time that we spend talking about, like social issues in terms of politicians versus like what people care about. So it's like almost always the economy. And you know, so if you put more money in their pockets, they're going to be happy. So, you know, if they say, okay, like we got rid of, or we severely lowered the income tax. And then if you elect another Republican, probably JD Vance will be up in line. Then, you know, we can finally end the Fed, or we can take steps to end the Fed and I'll give you more money, you know, it's kind of like a longer term planning. I think that would be the way to go there.
So I think, if you're going to eliminate or abolish the federal income tax, it's something you'd have to get done within your first 100 days. The reason I would think you'd have to do that because the first order effects of getting rid of the income tax would be offsetting it with the tariffs. So automatically your price of goods are going to increase by whatever amount it's going to be set at. So let's just say they're going to increase by 20%. And I think, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think that would be probably a pretty good starting point to expect prices to increase. Maybe less, maybe more. But after that, you're going to start to see the offset with people being able to save more money. So that initial shock of the price increases is going to cause a lot of panic, and a lot of people are going to think it's probably the worst thing that's ever happened. But after you get through that initial shock period and prices level and people are starting to generate more take-home income, once you start saving the difference between the tariffs and what you're paying in taxes, I think it'll be a net positive. I feel if they try and put this off and do it after the first year, closer to the second year, I think the Republicans lose the House and the Senate in the midterm elections, just because people will just be so upset with the price increase, which again are inevitably going to happen if you abolish the income tax. So in order for this to happen, I think we'll know it's going to happen within the first 100 days. And if me, a Marine, a crayon eater, can figure this out and can see this happening, I would hope that somebody in his administration can see it and it would implement this as well pretty early on. But after that, oh, go ahead, Omar.
I was just going to say, I think the best time for them to do it would be tax season. You know, if like the tax deadline date, if right around there they said, you know, this is, you know, from this point on, they're not going to go forego, you know, the 2023 taxes. But I could see them saying like right around tax time, because that's when people realize it and they look at the numbers and they see like, oh, I paid this much money to the federal government. Like, what am I getting for it? You know, that's when it's like most painful, right? They take it out of your paycheck automatically on purpose. So you don't look at it, right? If you had to write a check every month or something, or every year at the end of the year, you'd be much more pissed off. So that's when people are most aware of it. So I imagine like if I were Trump, you know, like if I'm, you know, yeah, think of like Trump's mindset to, at least to me, is like very much PR focused, right? So what's going to get him the most PR bang for the buck when people are the most pissed off about it, which is when they are paying their taxes. You know, when you get that bill that you owe, you underpaid, so you have to pay this much, or, you know, whatever the case. So I could see like right around tax deadline. So that might be outside of the 100 days. That would be my guess, you know, to be able to tie that. Like, hey, this is the last time you're paying income tax because, you know, me, Donald Trump, the greatest ever, or however he talks about himself, will end the...
That was pretty spot on.
Yeah, so that's kind of my thoughts on it. But yeah, I think if he doesn't follow through like really strongly on a lot of his promises, then the people that were like swayed out of like desperation or hope to him this election will completely abandon him, and he'll lose the House and Senate, I think pretty drastically, because... You know, it's really going out on a limb after the way, his first term went, to vote for him again. You know, he asked for a lot of, you know, benefit of the doubt, like that he didn't know how bad things were, and he didn't know like the bad people he was bringing onto his team. And, you know, people might give him another chance, but if he doesn't deliver on some major things early on, you know, he's gonna lose a lot of support, you know. I like that Thomas Massie introduced a constitutional carry bill. I would like to see that, you know, if he wins House and Senate, he 100% should be expected to get that passed. Cause that was something that he talked about, as a candidate in 2016, and that completely disappeared. I think there was the Vegas shooter or something, and that just completely went off the radar. You know, so I think that, he can't let any current events, push him off of the course of, what's best for the country. You know, and if that thing gets like to the floor and then stalls, or I think it's going to be really bad for him. A lot of the gun owners and stuff, you know, I don't think they forgot about the, you know, take the guns first and do due process second, the bump stocks. You know, there's a lot of things that he did wrong. So if he wants to make those right, I think the best way for him to do that and to show he and the Republicans are the pro Second Amendment group, is to, do that constitutional carry. And then, from the financial standpoint, I think cutting the government is going to be the easiest thing, because I think he can do that with a swipe of a pen. And I'm hoping he puts Vivek in charge of that, because Vivek seemed to have a plan for it.
Vivek say that he wanted to do like 50% and just choose like randomly through it.
Yeah, that's fine. I don't care. I don't care how they do it. I just know that he has a plan, and like having a plan to do it is much better than just saying you're going to do it. And again, I think you can just do that with a swipe of a pen, because you're in charge as the head of the executive, like where the money goes. And to the point, like the IRS, like even if you can't like get a bill through to abolish the income tax, you can gut the IRS and remove their ability to collect taxes and audit and all that stuff. And then you're effectively doing it anyway, you know? Or you just tell them, hey, like don't collect taxes, you know? Like, I'm pretty sure that, you know, you can do that as the head of the executive. So there's steps that can be taken, to unilaterally change things. And I think those have to be seen, like you said, early on, before that, before the midterm elections and stuff. And you don't want anything that could cause like ripples, like short-term pain, to occur, right before an election, because then people might react poorly to it. Whereas the long-term will be beneficial. So,
Well, gutting the federal government, slashing whatever amount of jobs you have, is going to be a significant amount of pain, just because the unemployment is going to rise. The federal government employees have increased at just an alarming rate over the last 4 years during this administration. So cutting them by any significant amount is definitely going to affect that. So there's definitely third and fourth order effects that you'll see. So you'll see unemployment rise. And again, that dictates on how, you know, if you're not adding the Federal Reserve, you know, how Jerome Powell is going to go ahead and interpret that and what he does with the rates. So again, like we've said, this is stuff that has to get done, at the very beginning of his administration, because that will definitely cause negative impacts during the midterms.
Yeah. And I would watch out for planned, like phased shutdowns, because that's like a good way to say like, oh, like we're going to do this first 4 years of my term, or like we're going to do, you know, X amount of jobs. And it's going to be like some like number that's not insignificant, but it's not like enough. And then over the next 10 years, we're going to reduce it by this much. And basically that's just like, hey, like we're going to punt this. And then, you know, if you don't elect the Republican we tell you to, then it's just going to go away and, you know, give me credit anyway. So like, that's something we got to be careful of and watch out for, is like those promises that extend beyond the administration, because those are effectively like, hey, you can't hold me accountable for it. You know, we saw the same thing with Biden did it with he set like a deadline on like humanitarian conditions in Gaza, but like the deadline's after elections, you know, and like then somebody from his staff came out and said like some whistleblower was like, ah, this is just a ploy to get people to vote for him. Like he's not actually going to change anything. That's why he set the deadline after elections. You know, it's to say like, oh, look, like here's a little carrot, vote for us. But, you know, there's no way to hold them accountable after you give them the vote. So, you know, that's my thoughts on it. Just, you know, watch out for those fake gifts. You know, like if we, you know, the vote for Trump should be accepting the fact that there's going to be pain, from like those things like unemployment, stuff like that. You know, and I'd be okay with like some sort of programs to like try to mitigate that, maybe like in the short term, you know, not such giving them federal jobs, but, I don't know, maybe like extended, unemployment benefits or something. You know, like, I think they had them at some point. I know there's like some way to get like extended benefits, but like say like the normal ones, like 3 months or whatever it is, if you extend it to like 6 months or even a year, like the unemployment benefits are pennies compared to like the actual income that we're paying for these positions. And at least then, you know, you wouldn't see like people, hopefully you wouldn't see the people like starving and stuff like that. Like I don't want to see like individuals suffering. I just want to see the government gutted. And unfortunately, like it's hard to separate the two. There could also be like grants, you know, like there's different programs to help to encourage companies to hire veterans and stuff. If you did something similar for, you know, encourage like some grants or something to hire federal employees, you know, I wouldn't be entirely opposed to that. Cause again, short term, like, yes, it's going to cost us money, but in the long term, if we're getting rid of those jobs, I think that's a good thing. So, stuff like that, those kind of programs, again, this is just like top of mind, like not really thinking too far into it, but those are the kind of things I would be okay with them doing. Cause that's, you know, 1-2 years maybe of, paying for something, not, however long like a career is in the federal government, 20 plus years, you know, so,
plus benefits, pension, all of that.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. And I imagine we would still be on the hook for pensions and stuff, even if they didn't make it like, I don't know how that stuff works, but I'd imagine that, you know, we'd still have to keep money in the reserves for their pensions and stuff like that. So maybe like, if they wanted to take their pensions early, maybe they could do it without, like too significant a penalty or something like that to also mitigate the unemployment aspect of it. You know, it's another thing you could probably look at to, help keep people from like losing homes and stuff like that while also reducing the size of the federal government.
Yeah, so reducing the size of federal government, but again, in the short term, it's going to cost a lot of money. I'm not sure if anyone is aware, but we're less than $30 billion from breaching the $36 trillion mark for the U.S. federal debt. Again, just to give you an idea of how much money $36 trillion is, it's just such a large number. You can't really fathom or comprehend what it is. So the Great Pyramids were built 4,500 years ago, give or take. So let's just say it was 4,500 years ago. If I were to pay you $21 million every day since the time that they were created until this day, you would still only have 34 $1.5 trillion. So making $21 million a day for the last 4,500 years, you still wouldn't have enough to cover the U.S. debt. And that's not including the unfunded liability. I think that number's at $200 trillion. It's just an absurd number. Let's see, at $220 trillion. So again, this debt is becoming a major issue, and it's a little disappointing that no one was really talking about it this election cycle. But as we've mentioned on previous shows, I think this is the last election cycle where they get away not addressing this. And I don't see this number decreasing, even if we get an Elon and Ron Paul in there, cutting all of the government that's unnecessary. I don't see this number decrease. I see it continuing to go up. And so, again, that's at the end of the day, that's what's going to make Bitcoin continue to become more valuable, just because they can't deflate it away.
I just want to add on to that. Like, I think that that's a good point. Like, it's, the debt's not going to go away. And like the main way to get rid of that is to, move to a different like system, right? So I think it's worth noting that, you know, at least Trump mentioned having like a Bitcoin reserve. You know, I think that is something that can be viable in the future. So, I definitely think that that's something that we should have as a nation, like prepared for when the dollar isn't the reserve currency, especially with everything going on with BRICS and all that stuff. You know, regardless of your political affiliation, you know, if you're a diehard Democrat that just likes Bitcoin and that's where you're here, that's fine. I would just say, like, you know, you got to advocate like within that party, for contingency plans, right? Like, you always want to have those contingency plans. You know, you can't just be, 100% reliant on the thing that you want the most to happen. So.
Yeah, absolutely. I want to welcome to the stage, Craig LeBlanc. How are you doing, sir?
Good. Enjoying the show. I was wondering if you could describe for the audience, for those that might not know, what an unfunded liability is and why that should definitely be a part of the equation. I know it's often glossed over, but can you explain that, what that is?
Hey, Eomar, I'm going to pass it over to you. I was just only enlisted in the Marine Corps. You were an officer, so I believe you eat fewer crayons than I do. So I'll let you go on that one.
No, I was enlisted too, my friend. When I said 03, I meant a grunt, so a fellow crayon eater.
Well, crap. Craig, oh, I see AC up here. AC, do you want to go ahead and give us the stats, sir?
So from my understanding...
Sorry, chasing.
Go ahead, AC.
Yeah. Sorry, I was chasing the unmute button as I jumped on stage. Yeah, so unfunded liabilities include a number of things that that aren't part of the regular budget. Some of those include Social Security liability, Medicare, military pension, government pensions, things like that. As far as the completely broken down list, I don't know it all. I just know that there's a long tail, especially with Social Security, that's included in the unfunded liabilities.
Yeah, I was going to say Social Security, I think, is the biggest one.
Medicare, Medicaid.
It's like 2030 that they said, or 2035 they said that Social Security is like projected to run out of money. It's like my short understanding or explanation for it is like, when it was set up, there was more people, or like at least a balanced amount of people paying into it than taking out of it. And then like with the baby boomer generation aging out, there's going to be like a, you know, increasing amount of people paying or taking out of it versus the decreased number of people like paying into it. So it just doesn't have the funds to keep going. And, you know, I don't think the money that was actually put into it was managed correctly by the government. I don't know if that's just more like tinfoil hat stuff or if there's actually legitimacy to that, but I don't think they like dropped it in there and put it into an S&P index or anything like that. I think they kind of did some shenanigans that made it worse.
They kept borrowing from it, correct? They kept borrowing from Social Security. They kept taking that money to use to fund other programs. And so that was the main issue, if I'm remembering this correctly, that caused.
Yeah. Yeah, I can't point to like a source for it. So I don't, like, that's what I've heard as well, but I don't know. I've never like dug too far into it to be able to speak definitively on it, but something along those lines is my understanding too, that they, you know, they basically like Dumb and Dumber, where they write all those IOUs and put them in the briefcase. That's basically like what the federal government did, with Social Security. So yeah, so like that's like the unfunded liabilities. You know, and that happens not just at the federal level, but like state levels. You know, like the state will mandate a bunch of things, but there's no money for it. There was the case of, I think one of the gun laws in New York got struck down because of that. Basically, it was just so, they wanted like a database of some like obscure thing. I forget what it was, like the amount of rounds that you purchased or like, some like, I forget what it was. It was something stupid, but like basically the police association was like, we can't do this without like a ton of money. And they just kind of allowed it to collapse then after that and didn't fight for it, but. Yeah, that's kind of the thing. Like the government will put in place like all these kind of laws or things, and then they don't think of like how you're going to pay for it. I think what's worse at the federal level is they have the power of the purse, so they can just, you know, take on that federal debt, whereas states might not have the same capability.
Yeah. So that was a great question, Craig. And so, I think Eomar was mentioning, and maybe it was AC, but it is 2030 is when they project, Social Security has come out and said that they project to be completely out of funds to, continue that program. So it is going to become a big issue very quick. And that's why, again, the next election is going to be 2028. There's no way they're getting around not talking about this and the debt. So, great question, Greg. Did you have anything else you wanted to add, sir?
Yeah, so maybe I can just explain it in my kindergarten mind, and then y'all can correct me if I'm wrong. But so the U.S. government kind of presents a budget, I guess, to the House, and then what the House might say is, well, you really don't make enough money to pay for that. But then they'll also ask, like a bank does that's lending you money, they would say, are there any other bills that we don't know about? And that's when the unfunded liabilities come into play. And I think they would say, oh yeah, we do have to pay all these retired people, many who haven't retired. And so basically what you're doing is running the math and saying you won't be able to pay those unfunded liabilities in addition to this $36 trillion debt you're trying to service plus all your bills. And I think that's what Jeff Booth and a lot of these other economists are saying, that we can no longer kick this down the road anymore, especially with all this looming unfunded liabilities. Am I understanding it correctly, or what I miss?
No, I think you said that perfect. And AC, correct me if I'm going wrong, but no, they keep kicking this can down the road, but eventually there's nothing else to pull from. So the money that they're currently pulling it to fund these programs, especially Social Security, that can is getting dry. So they literally cannot pull anything else. And so does that mean that those programs are just going to cease to exist? No, they'll find another way to go ahead and do something. Most likely, if I had to guess, they're just going to print their way out of it. And that's the benefit of having the world reserve currency. And so that's what they're going to default to. Even if they, you know, you get Ron Paul in there and he completely cleans up government spending and they get everything on track. It's $220 trillion, that they're short on. And a lot of that money, I don't know what the breakdown is for, Social Security. Oh, there we go. It's $27 trillion, right there is what Social Security needs to have. So, there's no way that they're going to be able to generate that money out of thin air. And so that they're going to have to print that. No, I don't think they have to print the whole $27 trillion at once. They'll do it in increments, or find different ways that they can try and go about it. But they're running out of options here pretty quick. So AC, did I hit that right?
Yeah, you know, from my ADIQ perspective, I think you were spot on. It's like Lynn Alden said, you know, that nothing's going to stop this debt train. They are going to have to print, and like you said, obviously it's not going to be all at once, but it's going to be hidden so that it's, you know, barely noticeable by people who aren't paying attention. And it's no wonder that we are, you know, it's kind of like this circular discussion a little bit. It's no wonder that the military industrial complex and these forever wars have existed and will continue to exist as long as we're on a fiat standard, because that's the mechanism by which, the printing takes place. You know, just like in the old Roman times, you come up with this, external conflict or this external enemy that is the bad guy. And then you debase the currency to pay for that conflict. Ultimately, that lands on the shoulders and the backs of the people. So I don't see this changing anytime soon. And until there's a major change, nothing's going to stop this debt train.
Yeah. Lynn Alden, nothing stops this train. Absolutely. So thanks, Craig, for jumping up here and asking those questions. I really appreciate that. And hopefully answered your questions in the audience if you're unaware with that. Yeah, so $36 trillion, we're $30 billion away from it. So again, and the shocking number was that we added almost $600 billion in the last 5 weeks. So the rate that it's growing is, I think, the main, is concerning thing. And again, if I say it three times in a row, we'll summon Joe Calasari, but debt spiral. I agree with Joe a lot. I think he keeps me pretty grounded, but this is one of the things where I think he's probably wrong on. And I think the others, James Lavish, even Greg Foss is correct with the death spiral thesis. And I just don't see a way out. Sorry, AC, I didn't mean to cut over you there.
No, you're good. Did you happen to see, James Lavish's post, now that you mentioned it, that between, the day before Halloween and Halloween, we had added $100 billion overnight.
$108 billion.
Yeah, that blew my mind.
Yeah, so it was just on a Friday, right? On Friday, we added $108 billion. And again, I have no idea where this money goes. It's crazy. And so, I don't have any answers, unfortunately. But I see we have Wade up here on the panel. Good morning, sir.
Good morning.
How was your weekend? Did you get a lot of stuff done for Bitcoin Alaska?
Oh, not so much this weekend. Kind of took a weekend to relax after Halloween. And yeah, going into fall here in Alaska, it's getting dark. It's one of the nice things about the time frame that we're going to be doing the Bitcoin Alaska is it's going to be light all day, but we're going into the more dark period right now. We did find one bug in our payment system, with the fiat side. It's kind of funny that it was a fiat side. Of course it is the fiat side. Stripe didn't like a transaction, so we had to do a little workaround. But yeah, that's all worked out now. Working out bugs.
Oh, perfect. And so if anyone is unaware, we are throwing, Bitcoin Alaska. It will be taking place July 5th and 6th in Juneau. Alaska is absolutely gorgeous. I highly recommend just getting a one-way ticket because you will be very hard pressed to find an excuse to go back home. It's absolutely amazing. You're not going to want to miss this conference. Recommend getting there a little early. There's going to be a lot of pre-event or pre-conference events taking place. There's going to be, a private cruise going up to one of the fjords. And so if you buy a whale pass, to the conference, that'll include this cruise to, Tracy Fjord. And it's one of the only whale passes where you'll actually be able to see actual whales, with your ticket. So go check them out. Click, Bitcoin Alaska handle right there. We'll throw something up in the nest really quick. But check them out, buy your tickets and get your hotel rooms. Hotel rooms are going to be very scarce. So again, I'm really looking forward to that.
I'd like to add, to the conversation that you had going on earlier, rather than referencing the unfunded liabilities in dollars, if you look at, I never understood how states can get away with running unfunded liabilities that are bailed out by the federal government, because that's just disparate treatment between the states. I never appreciated that. But I like to look at it more of a Mahler's viewpoint. I've never heard him actually say this, but I've heard him relate Bitcoin, of course, to, Bitcoin's not blockchain. Blockchain's a scam. It's a time chain. So rather than relate the national debt to dollars, it seems like it'd be more beneficial to relate it to the amount of time it's worth. So you look at the average salary and see how many years, based off of current demographics, it would take to pay off the national debt. That just seems like a more efficient way of doing it. And yeah, this way, if you try to print your way out of it, you're not going to reduce the amount of time because you debase the value of the currency. So it would reflect the time, not the dollar denominator value of that time.
Do you, off the top of your head, remember what time they give that in? Because I can't think of any time.
I don't know. I don't know, but I'd be willing to work up the numbers and see what I come up with. Of course, I'm not an economist, so my numbers would be pretty basic. But yeah, just take the working class, you know, the amount of people in the working class, average salary of those individuals, how many years of labor that would take. I heard somebody work up a number a year or two ago, and it was some astronomical number. So it's worth, you know, researching and stating on the spaces what that would be.
Well, we take about $5 trillion every year in federal taxes, income tax. And so if we're 220, 5 goes into 200, what is that? That's going to be 20, 40. So you're looking at about 440 years? No, that's not right. 4 million? Something crazy like that. Yeah. Sorry. It's not good to do math on live space. You can laugh at me if you'd like to. But yeah, it's a crazy number. So yeah, absolutely insane. I'd like to go ahead really quick, though, while I have your attention, to give a quick thank you to our partners, Black Sheep Ammo. Restock your ammo at blacksheepammo.com. Solo Satoshi, open source Bitcoin mining at solosatoshi.com. Punch Plate, I don't see in the audience today, but stamp your seed phrase on a metal plate at punchplate.com. And Paladin Tower Tactics, professional firearms and tactical training at paladintowertactics.com. Something that Randy Kelly brought to my attention this morning in the Daily Intelligence Bulletin was the German government is at risk of collapsing due to deep divisions over their economic policy and budgetary decisions. AC, have you heard anything about that, or is it, or were you just as surprised when you read it this morning?
No, I'm with you. So I read Randy's dib this morning. And unfortunately, with school drop-off with the little ones, I didn't have an opportunity to dig into it yet, but it is near the top of the list this morning.
Yeah, so I did some quick digging around this morning on it. And again, this came completely out of left field for me. I didn't have any idea that they were kind of in this type of situation. So they're having a lot of disagreements with their economic policies. So divisions within their government, they have the Free Democratic Party and the Green Party, are having a major issue on how they want to go forward with funding their government. The Green Party just wants to increase spending and stimulate the growth, while the Democratic Party only wants to use, fiscal policies and doesn't want to, wants to do tax cuts. And this is off of their, so I have their economic data coming through. So their GDP is supposed to decline 0.2% for this year. Their manufacturing sector is extremely struggling. It's declining quite significantly. So they're having a lot of stagflation. The labor market has a lot of weakness. Their inflation is starting to roar back. So it rose back up to 2.5% October, interrupting their previous downtrend, with their core inflation right around 3%. So I think they're just a couple months ahead of what we have going on with, our government. But it's going to be definitely interesting state of affairs to watch and follow and kind of keep tabs on. So it looks like they might have a snap election to try and figure things out and try and solve the issues that they're having. But it's going to be definitely something to keep an eye on. And if, Wade or Craig, if you have anything you'd like to add, please feel free to jump in on that. So moving on, something else coming up in Germany, that I saw break this morning was, a German trade giant, confirms to trial Bitcoin mining with their surplus energy to stabilize the grid. So, Deutsche Telekom, a telecommunication company, has partnered with Germany's oldest bank, Bankes Metzler, to launch a pilot project testing Bitcoin mining infrastructure powered by the surplus renewable energy. So their telecommunication, I believe, is T-Mobile here in the United States. And this initiative aims to utilize the excess electricity from renewable sources that would otherwise remain unused and wasted due to grid limitations or insufficient storage options. So again, I think we were talking about this last week, but it's pretty crazy that this convergence of energy and finance and Bitcoin, it was like once just a theory for us, but it's now starting to become a real life scenario and it's just starting to play out before our eyes. So AC, I'd like to get some thoughts, if you don't mind, on this news and what you think is going to happen.
Yeah. Well, like you said, I think this is like the game theory playing out in front of our eyes. Fully anticipate that any type of test or experiment like this, whoever's conducting it will come to the realization that, you know, they have the ability to ramp up energy production and then curtail energy used for Bitcoin mining during times of need. And, you know, we've seen that in the U.S., whether it was like blizzard or scalding hot summer in Texas and whatnot, and their ability to be able to not only use the existing energy, but this is moving towards energy abundance. And I think that is really what the world needs, is more abundant sources of energy to raise up not just, you know, what we would call the first world, but also to raise up the global south and improve the quality of life for the vast majority of the 8-9 billion people on this earth. And so once more nations come to that realization, I think there's going to be a seismic shift towards more energy abundance. But yeah, my two cents.
Yeah. Greg, I see your head. Oh yeah, go ahead, sir.
Yeah, I was going to say I can add a little to that. Just for those that don't really understand the energy equation, when any country or any city, municipality, or anybody that's making energy for a general population, not for a specific use case, like say you're a big chemical plant and you're going to consume all of the electricity. Like I live in Baton Rouge. We have one of the largest oil refineries right here in Baton Rouge. They have two big coal-fired plants in here. But they can consume all of that because they can run that plant 24 hours a day. If you're in Germany and you're producing electricity for a general population, you're kind of strapped to this two peaks a day when people wake up and when people come home. So 2 to 4 hours a day, this is called peak demand. And so when you do a cost benefit analysis of building a grid scale power plant for a city in Germany, you're looking at, well, we're going to have clients for 4 hours a day and roughly, and then it's going to drop off a cliff. Still going to have some demand. So for 20 hours a day, this massive, expensive, multi-billion dollar asset is just sitting there idle. And this is called stranded energy. And this is where I think Bitcoin comes in as a natural game theory to say, we will be your buyer of last resort. We will buy every low off-peak power you can. And so you can look at a power plant in the middle of a city as a stranded energy producer for 20 hours a day. And it's, of course, they're begging somebody at 2 o'clock in the morning to buy energy from you if you're making energy for, say, the city of New York or something, because everybody's asleep. And so I think that's where Bitcoin can come in and should be a part of every single power production strategy from here on out. I think once you wake up to the realization that you've got a buyer of last resort, then it changes the financial, your financials totally. And then especially if you're in like a third world country where you're actually waiting for the city to grow up around your plant because you've dammed some big river, but there's no city around it. And so like the Three Gorges Dam in China has this problem. They've got so much power that they don't have enough people within the 500 mile distribution range of this. So, and that's where I think, unfortunately, with Bitcoin miners, if you're having to compete with someone that owns the power generation and all they have to do is buy the gas or just let the water through the dam, it's going to be hard to compete with them because they pretty much have cheap or free power. But anyway, just wanted to add that to the conversation when people start talking about mining and stuff is at the nation state level.
No, I appreciate that, Craig. And last month it was, the little town or municipality in Norway, turned off their Bitcoin miners and instantly, their residents of that municipality had an increase. I'm going to be wrong on this number, but it was right around 30% on their electric bills. And so it is significant. It's going to be interesting to watch this unfold. And I'm fascinated by the mining sector and all the potential that we still haven't unlocked with stabilizing grids, bringing energy to communities and countries that don't have access to it, or people just don't want to invest their time and money into it because there's no ROI. And so if you don't know, we're going to have a couple representatives from Marathon joining us this Thursday. So make sure you tune in for that and get some questions. But I'm really looking forward to that and picking their brain and seeing how they see this industry start to unfold over the next 5 to 10 years and how it'll be inevitable, or it is just incorporated to every single thing. So again, I wish the telecommunication company the best of luck in Germany, and I think a prediction that you will see others following suit, because again, it's a win-win for them.
Yeah, and something to add to that too, I'm actually trying my best to push a couple of cities in this direction. I have about 300 cities as clients of mine in a manufacturing business that I own, but if you're a little mayor of a city that has like 5,000 people, it's nothing for you to get a loan for a 50 megawatt power plant for that town of yours. And so what's the benefit? Well, now you get to control the electricity. It's a revenue generator, and you get to say, and we'll bring in 10 high paying jobs with bucket truck services. And you know, you have to have your lineman crews. These are high paying jobs. And then on top of that, you could say, and we'll sell all the electricity at night to our Bitcoin mine, and we'll need two or three other high paying jobs to run that Bitcoin mine. So now you're bringing jobs to the city. This is a money making venture for the city, because now you can buy natural gas really cheap, run it through your power plant, all the excess energy. Now you can turn into Bitcoin, and you can sell that Bitcoin instantly. If you're in the energy selling business, imagine you own a power plant and you're selling electricity. You don't get paid for like 60 to 90 days. I mean, how many of us, you know, when we're struggling back in the day when you were young, let your electricity turn off before you would pay it, but they sold it to you how long ago? Whereas when you mine Bitcoin, that's instant cash that you can sell it for. And so I think as cities start to understand that this can be part of their local infrastructure and a money-making opportunity for them. And then also, imagine if you're going to a bank to borrow money and you're representing yourself in a business versus you're representing the city of so-and-so, which has got a monopoly on the property tax. So banks are much more ready and willing to lend a municipality or government that has the ability to tax the property to get paid. So they have access to debt markets to be able to scale up their Bitcoin infrastructure much quicker than even Bitcoin exclusive mining operations. So I think cities are going to be the Bitcoin mining institutions for that reason alone, because they have a good reason to produce electricity. They have a good reason to mine Bitcoin and the banks are going to want them. They're going to want to lend them as Bitcoin miners, rather than someone that's exclusively just building a Bitcoin mine. At least if I was a bank and a risk assessor, wouldn't you want to lend money, to a city? Because even if the Bitcoin operation fails, you can still get your money out of that city. Whereas if you lend money to a Bitcoin mining operation and that fails, I mean, good luck getting your money if you're a bank. Anyway, I'll land it there.
No, that was perfect. And yeah, it makes more sense for these banks to lend it to the cities or municipalities, cause they have a chance to recoup, if they were in default on the loans. And so I just threw up into the nest. There was the mayor of Rockdale that wrote that article in his newspaper praising, Riot for their renewed effort to revive, his small town. His town it was really going under after, they had, I think it was a smelting plant left in the 50s or 60s. So it was a little later than that. But anyways, they had a large manufacturing leave and it just devastated his community. And Riot came in and used the existing infrastructure, hooked up generators to it, and they're mining Bitcoin there. And now the town is thriving. So again, it's these real life, real world solutions to the problems, revitalizing these small rural communities. And again, they have nothing to lose. So for them, it's only 100% upside, because the downside, they're going to go under regardless. And so again, as other communities start to see them prosper and grow and it starts making more headlines, these other companies start adopting it. I think you're spot on, Craig, that these cities and then these companies are going to be the major players. So, it'll be, go ahead.
I was going to say the only slow thing is that these institutions, you cannot, I have cities. Matter of fact, I'm placing an order for Boonesville, Mississippi, which I hope they're not listening, but I doubt they are because they don't even know what X is. But they still send me a yellow copy of the PO. I get that in the mail. And you know what yellow means? That means they're still using the pink, yellow, white carbon copy to issue a city, spending city money. So you can imagine how far away they are from – they still ask me for my fax number. And so – The people that you think you're frustrated trying to explain Bitcoin to your family, go try to explain Bitcoin to a city. And so I still think they're the best natural fit, but this is a slow moving train here. Cities are extremely slow. And then you're asking the banks to lend a city money to start a Bitcoin mine on their electrical grid. Now you're really daisy chaining a lot of slow moving tasks, but I think eventually these are the ones that are going to be the natural fits for Bitcoin mining. Kind of like I've always thought the gold people are natural fits for Bitcoiners because they kind of already get it. Well, I think cities are a natural fit for energy producers and eventually Bitcoin miners because that's the business they're in already.
Yeah, absolutely. And so I can understand your frustration working with communities who are still using fax machines and carbon copies. So it definitely, again, we got a long and, not difficult path, but just frustrating path ahead of us. But again, make sure you take your time and just give everybody the opportunity to understand it on their own time. Just think of it as a giant ship in the ocean. It's not going to turn extremely quick. It's going to take a little while. So just have that patience with everybody. Again, that's a lot easier said than done. I find myself getting frustrated with people looking for the answer to the problems that they're facing, and you present them the solution and they're still just, they want nothing a part of it. So patience is the key.
Yeah. And just to add to that, Cole, you're right. It does take a long time to get a city to do something, but once a city does something, it's nearly impossible to get it undone. And so once a Bitcoin mine of any size gets in a city that's producing its own electricity, good luck getting that undone. It's hard to do it, but once that foundation stone is laid, cities don't change. They don't like to change for anything. Even when changing is costing them money, is costing them citizens, is costing them opportunities, cities will continue to do the wrong thing forever. Not because it's right or wrong, but because they don't change. And so I think that's good for Bitcoin because Bitcoin is a long game. And so it's a good fit for a city to, and cities, let me tell you where it'll benefit you from. Once you get cities to mine Bitcoin, no shitcoin will ever come in there because the shitcoin will die before it ever gets a chance to do business with a city. Whereas Bitcoin will just play the 100-year game and take the 25 years and still be the same thing it is 25, 30 years from now when the city's still voting on the issue. a shitcoin won't last that long. They'll be, you know, burnt out before then. So I think, it's a good fit for Bitcoin. I like that it takes a long time. That to me, that's a moat that only Bitcoin has, is Bitcoin plays the forever game. But,
yeah, absolutely, Craig. That was well said. And so I'm going to leave the show right there. And that's what we're going to read. So I want to thank everybody for tuning in to us. Again, it means a lot to me. It makes my job a lot easier seeing y'all out there, seeing you throw the emojis up, and just seeing the regulars, tune in every single day. So thank you. And thank you for everyone who joined the panel, AC, Yomar, Wade, and Craig. Thank you for joining us today. Open invitation to come back. I really appreciated your insight and your contributions. So join us tomorrow. Tomorrow's the election day, November 5th. It's going to be a big day. It'll be a fun episode. But all the events are going to happen from now until Tuesday. I would not be surprised if some major events take place in the next 24 hours. So make sure you tune into that. I do not believe we are going to have a video podcast Tuesday night. I think the guys are still trying to get everything squared away with Operation Gabriel. But stay tuned. I'll give you an update with that tomorrow morning. Again, huge thank you to all of our partners and to all of you for making this show possible. So I will see you all tomorrow morning at 10 a.m. Get out there and spread the message. But don't shitcoin. It's like buying a lottery ticket with yesterday's numbers.